Welcome back to Shatter and This. We are going to turn the page. I've got my good friend Larry on the line. And Larry, before we return to Barbara Sheath, just imagine going to Palestine and with the so-called Palestinians celebrating Christmas, the biblical in the biblical birthplace of Christ. How many things can you say that might anger Yahweh? Are there included in that statement by the SRN announcer and his mythical Palestinian spokesperson?
Oh boy, everything.
Yeah, oh boy. So weren't the Philistines the enemy of Yah's people, and they're actually presented as the most detested enemy of Yehudim and of Yisrael?
Yeah, absolutely.
So the very name Palestine, which is based on the Philistines, would do nothing but for taking Yahweh named the place Yehudah and Yisrael, and which means those who engage and endure with God, and Yehudah means related to and to relate to Yahweh. Very powerful concepts, and rename it after the enemy of his people. You start right there and say, you know, you're probably on the wrong track here. And then you go from there to celebrating not Sukkah, not Pesach. You're going to celebrate the pagan holiday where after Mother Earth is impregnated by the sun on Easter Sunday, 9 months later, the son of the sun is born in virtually every pagan religion, and you're going to go and you're going to honor your God by celebrating the birth of the son of the sun.
It's amazing.
On Christmas.
It's amazing. They remind me of this fellow with this haggy fellow with the red moons.
Yes.
You know? Or blood moons,
yeah,
whatever that
right. is. We're astronomical events.
You know, I have sat down and I have debated today two women that are, I just think that I love people and that's good enough for my God. And I said, well, your God didn't leave any instructions behind, did he? You know,
right.
he didn't write anything for us to read, to know him. You know.
I'm glad you know you've got your God, and that's what's important to you. It's just a shame that your God has nothing in common with the real God. And
you
so,
know,
you know, good luck since you created your own God. Good luck with that. You know, the God that whose words I'm sharing with you created us. And, you know, I'm happy to have a relationship with the God who actually created us. And if you choose to have a relationship with the God you created, hey, that is your choice. But, you know, I'd be really careful about promoting that God with anyone. I think I'd keep that God all to myself if I were you.
Yeah.
Yeah, that actually bothers me less than the stupidity of the Hagees and their influence on hundreds of thousands of people and just literally bewildering people with absolute nonsense. He is reinforcing this micromanaging God where everything that happens in the universe is because he is manipulating everything, which means that free will is for naught, the covenant is for naught. He is just nothing but a micromanager, and he's not very good at it because he can't get his aim right, he can't get his timing right. He missed all the big events, and oh boy! But
What's it all got to do with the price of rice in China?
You know, a good friend of mine thought that this was really amazing stuff, and you get into the detail of it, and you say, oh my goodness! I mean, how many lies do you have to? I guess if you string together 100 lies, then after a while, they start to reinforce one another and starts to sound true. Maybe it's like Christianity. It's a string of so many lies.
Sure, yeah. So, there's a tradition of listening to clergy, too, of course. Which
of course.
Are the last people, by the way, Yahweh tells us to listen to.
You know, right? Yahusha, it was universal in his approach to clergy. First of all, he never approached them. Never did he go out to them. when they approached him, rather than receiving them, rather than using them, rather than teaching them, rather than saying, oh boy, are you guys are working for me, man. I am really honored to have you guys glorify me in this way. Every time that someone in the clergy or politics approached him, what did he do?
Well, he tore him a new one is what he did.
Yeah. Yeah, he blew him away. He absolutely blew him away. You know, it's not only did he say, you have nothing to do with me, he openly condemned them. He exposed them for being
serpents, yeah, the offspring of the loathed prostitute.
Right.
Yahweh's condemnation of the clergy is 100%.
There's only one place, Larry, where you can find something more condemning than what Yahusha says in Matanyah 23. Matanyah 23, Yahusha is just openly condemning. I mean, he goes on for an entire chapter condemning religion and politics. It's just absolutely telling us everything that's wrong with religion and politics and why he has nothing to do with it, why he hates it. You know, goddamn religion is Matanyah 23. There is a place where we can turn to find a much more condemning, intolerant, hostile.
Malachi?
Malachi is worse, but there's even worse than Malachi.
Where?
Yirmiyah. The entire book, Yirmiyah, known to many as Jeremiah, was specifically written to Gentiles, not to Yehudim. It begins saying that this book is being written to Gentiles to explain to Gentiles why religion is a complete fraud and why God hates it. And the entire book is focused on why you ought not be religious. In fact, it's the book where Yahweh expressly condemns Christmas. I mean, expressly. He talks about you idiots following the ways of the Gentiles. You go into the forest and you cut down an evergreen tree and you bring it into your home and then you decorate it with lights and with silver and gold. And you've got this dead tree and you're celebrating this dead tree in a religious context. What's wrong with you? Are you morons?
Yeah, you follow the way of the heathen. That's what he
says. Oh, Christmas tree, you know? Exactly. Yeah, God is overtly condemns what Christians celebrate.
Well, you know, I was raised in an atheist household, but there was Christmas.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
You know, there's a reason that God says, you know, not only do I want you to walk away from your country, and understand that at the time that he made that claim, and at the time that he will return, we're going to find similarity here. At the time that Yahweh asked Abram to walk away from Babylon, which was his country, there was absolutely no distinction between the Babylonian politic and the Babylonian religion, between the Babylonian economy and the Babylonian military. It was exactly like Egypt. Religion, politics, military, and economics were all one system. And it will be that way again before Yahweh returns.
It's pretty well that way now. I mean, it's
very close.
There's a melding of patriotism, religion. God Bless Our Troops is all over the radio today.
Of course.
You know,
on this holy time of the year, this is the time that we should be specially cognizant of those that are abroad serving us, protecting us. Yeah, oh, absolutely. There's a blend of
bankers to rape other countries is what's going on, like bastards, stepchildren. That's all that's happening. And then they send them home in a box and staple one of their damn flags to a dead man's corpse and say, honor it.
Yeah.
And people foolishly do, you know.
But it's really important that we understand that when Yahweh asked Abram, before he could participate in the covenant relationship, to walk away,
Babylon,
to walk out of Babylon, Babylon, as was the case with Assyria, as was the case with Egypt, as was the case with Greece, as was the case with Rome, as was the case for Europe under the authority of the Roman Catholic Church, as is the case in every Islamic country today, and as is the case with Europe and the United States in the melding of socialist secular humanism and political correctness as the national religion of education and politics and the media. As was the case in all of those things, there is no distinction between religion and politics, between economics and militarism. And it is that collective of things that Yahweh and Yirmiyah, throughout the book of Jeremiah, he exposes the combination of those influences and says, that's what I want you to walk away from. Now,
well,
you mentioned something.
Every facet of our society, doesn't it?
Isn't
it taught in the schools? It's taught in the schools. It's taught in the churches.
Correct.
It bleeds into every corner and every facet of everything in the society.
Yeah.
And, you know, we have to kind of isolate ourselves practically, you know.
Right. And if you were God from his perspective, do you think that that you would view the atheist who says there is no God differently than you would view the Christian or the Muslim who has created a false God? Which of those do you think is further from you, more distant from you, or is there no distinction between the false God and no God?
I would say the people that created the false God are, okay? That's what I would say.
Yeah. But in the end, is it really going to matter?
In the end, it doesn't matter at all. But, I mean, if you're asking me to pick,
yeah.
You know, an atheist, atheists are kind of out there. My dad was an atheist.
Mm-hmm.
And his thing was, you know, my handshake's good. I can do this. I can do that. Came from a very, very poor family, by the way, and became a self-made millionaire.
Uh-huh.
But, you know, and his word was, you know, good.
How in the world did he become a self-made millionaire without the meddling of the Christian God?
He did. What I would say about it is that, you know, he just kind of kept his beliefs to himself and shut up and kind of smiled when people talked about religion and walked the other way.
Yeah, I would think that you're correct in terms of God would be more adverse to those who promote false gods, Christians and Muslims, for example, than he would be the atheist that says there's no God. But when the atheist becomes a proponent of socialist secular humanism and infects the educational system, the politics of a nation, and the academics of a nation, then I think that they're no different. That then the advocates of one religion are no different than the advocates of another. Welcome back to Shattering Myths. We're having a conversation with Larry about the nature of the truth and the nature of religion. One of the things that Scott and I were talking about, Larry, during the break, is the realization that if you look at the things of man, and for example, your friend that had a God that she had manufactured. If you look at the words of man and you look at the words of God, if you look at the creation, the things that man creates and the things that God creates, there is a way beyond prophecy where God proves his existence to determine what things are of God and what things are of man. You know, for example, the oldest example in literature is look at the pen and look at a lily. And if you put a pen under a microscope, what you begin to see is not this the sharp, smooth, shiny object, but all of the flaws. And the flaws are magnified. The closer you look, the more flawed the pen is. And then if you look at the lily under the microscope, the more powerful the microscope, the more magnificent the flower appears. The same thing is true with the words of men and the words of God. I wrote Paul's this book called the Great Galatians Debate, Questioning Paul. And analyzed Paul's letters, particularly his first letter, Galatians. The closer you look at what Paul said, the more putrid the man becomes, the more pathetic, the more just demented the man becomes. It becomes more obvious that he was a complete and utter fraud when you examine what he said closely. By comparison, if you examine what Yahweh wrote in his Torah, on the surface, it's beautiful. But as you really dig down and consider the meaning behind every word and the roots of each word and the letters that comprise the words, it goes from beautiful to absolutely magnificent.
Well, it's stunning.
Yes.
It's you know, religion does not, the Christian religion, or any other religion that claims to be based on Yahweh's words. That would include, you know, Messianic Judaism, Rabbinic right. Judaism. When you start putting all Yahweh's words together, what you find out is, well, this doesn't fit, that doesn't fit, that doesn't fit.
Correct.
When you just go to where the words take you, what you find out is that you're thousands of years down the road and everything still fits perfectly.
Correct. Yeah.
And it's always consistent. Amazing thing. If anyone hasn't done that, I would suggest, you know, that you go to introtogod.org or yadayahweh.com.
Yeah, or just yadayah.com.
It's yadayah now.
Yeah, just yadayah.com. Both work. It's just easier to go to yadayah.com. In fact, if you would like to interact with Larry or myself, you want us to answer questions, you can send us an email at yada@yadayah.com. But it's when you, those books, yadayah.com and introtogod.com, are both designed to take those who are serious about knowing God, not as man has conceived him, but as he conceived man. If you want to know the God who actually created the universe, go to both of those places. Yadayah actually explains the process that God used to create the universe, the timing of his creation, and introduces us to him in his prophetic testimony exactly in the same order that he introduced himself to us. And that introduction to God, rather than presenting this information chronologically, which is a very interesting way to look at it, presents the same information by topic, and it emphasizes the seven topics that are the most important for us to know, to come to know and benefit from our relationship with God. And so it's just a walk through Yah's testimony, but you're right, Larry, what it does is, rather than just present Yahweh's testimony, it does what we're going to do on this next statement. It looks through the lens of an etymological microscope to amplify all of these words so that we come to understand their roots and their full meaning to have a better appreciation of what God is saying.
Well, for example, what I would say is you find out that Yahweh is approachable and knowable. What I say is this, is that real men are not on their knees to God.
No, they're
real
not.
Real men walk with Yahweh.
Right, they're on their feet. They're on their feet.
I want to share just one example, if I can, and this is from Yashayahu and Hosha,
okay.
Very quickly. Then Yahweh said, for so much as these people approach me with their mouths and their lip service, yet they remove their hearts from me, their fear, which is in Paleo Hebrew, that's Yira.
Mm-hmm.
Towards me exists because it is taught from man-made traditions and learned by rote. Now, I want you to think of all the places in the book named after Biblios, the sun goddess, that they tell you that the beginning of knowledge is the fear of God, and on and on. Yahweh just said that all fear of him. So Yira can be fear, but it can also be respect.
Yeah.
And so what they've done is they've put fear where respect belongs. And
we'll be back in a moment.
All throughout religious material.
We'll be back in a moment. Welcome back to Shattering Myths. Larry was sharing two quotes from Yahweh with us. They first came from the book known to most as Isaiah. It's actually Yashayah. Yasha is the Hebrew word for to save, meaning the verbs for saving or salvation. Yah is the shortened familial version of Yahweh's name, so it means salvation is from Yah. And you said the second that you wanted to cite that would dispel the myth of religion. Yeah, Hosha means salvation. It is based upon the Hebrew verb Yasha. It's a subject that Yahweh had a lot to say about. So even the name Yahusha is a salvation-focused declaration. It means Yahweh saves.
Yahweh saves.
Yeah.
But here we go, Hosha 13:1. This way we can see who's behind fear and trembling here.
Oh, okay. Sure.
When Ephraim spoke, there was trembling and terror. He exalted himself in Yisra El, but through the Lord Baal. He did wrong, and he died.
Wow.
So, you know, of course, religion ticks, and government ticks, by the way, through fear. relational are really changed to create fear in religious material, where direction becomes law and statements become commands, right. and interaction with Yahweh becomes praying,
yeah.
And on your knees and so forth. Right. And it goes on and on and on.
Yeah, so Texas churches would put on their sermon bulletin board, if you think it's hot here, you don't want to go to hell.
Yeah.
And the fire and brimstone preachers that were part of the Reformation in America, they would all base their sermons on, you either listen to me and do what I'm saying, or you're going to go to hell, and you don't want to go to hell, so you know you better repent and agree with what I'm offering you. It's the fear of hell that drives many people to religion. It's also the fear of being judged by God, and the fear of God that causes people to what they think is to behave appropriately. But the fact of the matter is that God doesn't even know the vast majority of human souls, has never known them, will never know them, and that it's a very small percentage of people that God judges and sends off to Sheol, the place of separation. Most human souls go through life lost, ignorant, irrational, never having made a clear choice regarding the Torah's teaching, never having examined it closely, never having thought about it, never having made a decision on what God was offering. And therefore, they simply die. At the end of their natural lives, they simply cease to exist. Nothing to fear. The God of the Torah, prophets, and Psalms does not torture. The God of Christianity does. The God of Islam does. But the Yahweh, who is the author of the Torah, he does not torture anyone.
What Yahweh does is he makes invitations that we decide to accept out of our own volition, out of free will, or we don't, which is what Adam and Chawa were all about. He didn't want them to, he didn't want to keep them like a caged bird. He wanted them to choose him. So he used Satan, Halal ben Shakar, as a straw man. Right. And after that point, Adam and Chawa both had to do what? They had to choose Yahweh.
Right. Is of our choice too. And if you try to choose based on erroneous data, so you're going to a church and it's someone like Hagee leading you astray with all sorts of bogus information, then you've squandered free will. You were given free will, the choice to come to know God or to reject him or to just live apart from him. And because of the preponderance of false information from the likes of Christians or Muslim religious clerics, you've been misled and squandered your opportunity. This is the next statement in Bob Rashid. I'd like to continue with Yahweh's presentation of Genesis. And he says, through Abram, which he has now said specifically that it is through his name that he's going to do marvelous things. And his name means merciful and enriching father. And through you, he says, the entire human family, the mishpah of the earth, will be adored and blessed. It is really interesting to look at this this word mishpah. It is translated family some 300 times in the Torah, prophets, and Psalms. But the word itself is a derivative of mishpat, and mishpat is the word that Yahweh uses to convey the means that he deploys to justly resolve disputes. And it also means to exercise good judgment. So if you consider the words here in a more amplified form, it's not just the offspring of Abraham, which would ultimately be the Messiah. It's not just through the written legacy of the Torah, prophets, and Psalms, all written by descendants of Abraham. It's not just the power of Abraham's name that introduces us to Yahweh as our merciful Father and our enriching Father that he's going to bless humankind. It is through the Mishpat. And so he's saying here, and through the Mishpat, the means to obtain justice and to resolve disputes, through the exercise of good judgment, everyone on earth will be adored and blessed. That means to say that if you want to be the recipient of Yahweh's adoration, his love, if you want to be the recipient of Yahweh's blessing, if you want to benefit from God getting down on his knees to lift us up, what you need to look to is the Mishpat. Shares the exact same root. And the Mishpat is the living embodiment of the and result of the Moed Mikre, of the seven invitations to meet with God. It's the means that God used to resolve all of the flaws and rebellion of his children, so that his children go from mortal to immortal. His children go from flawed to perfect. His children go from estranged to adopted. His children go from weak and disintegrating as we are in our corporeal form to empowered. And we go from relatively ignorant to enriched. All of those things are made.
Who takes the beating in all this?
Yahweh himself.
There we go.
And so Yahweh came up with a means as a father for him to make the sacrifice to lift us up. And it is all conveyed through Mishpat, and Mishpach is a derivative of it. And so here is a great example that unless you really amplify the words and come to understand the words, you'll misinterpret the passage. For example, the covenant did not enrich all humankind. The name, Yahweh's merciful and enriching, did not bless or benefit all humankind. The descendant of Jacob, whether it be Moshe or whether it be who scribed the Torah, or Dod who wrote the great songs to the Torah, or was known as David, or Yosha, the Messiah, as a descendant, they did not adore or bless all humankind. The vast preponderance of people have ignored what Yahweh said in his Torah, have ignored what Dod wrote about the Torah, have ignored what Yosha actually said and did. And so none of them blessed all humankind. And as you said, most people fear God and they approach him as a Lord, as Baal, and therefore they have no concept as to why he chose this name, Abraham, merciful and enriching father. So what God is actually saying here, it's through the deployment of the Mishpat that his children become family, that he gets down on his knees, Barak, to lift us up in love through the process of the Mishpat, of these means that he uses to justly, justifiably resolve our sin.
Yeah, and part of those is adopting us into the family, right?
Right.
That's what Bikurim's all about, right? Being adopted into the family. And yet, Yahusha says Yahweh says that Yahusha is taking the strokes due the family.
Yes.
Not so, due everyone in the world who is a member of a religious organization, due the family. So he took the strokes for the family. So you have to be adopted into the family to have any of the benefits of the covenant.
So what you're saying here is profound. What you're saying is that yes, the identification of Mishpat with Mishpat tells us that this is the means that Yahweh uses to resolve disputes. But the fact that Mishpat means family tells us for whom the blessing applies. And so all of Yahweh's family benefits from the Mishpat. But they're the only ones that benefit from the Mishpat. This is a word which unifies the benefit and those who receive it, the beneficiaries. So benefit and beneficiary are unified in this term. So the entirety of the family is benefits from Yahweh getting down on his knees, Barak, to lift us up, because it's the family for whom he made these sacrifices on our behalf. So it goes from being an inaccurate statement to an accurate statement simply based upon understanding what the words mean.
Yeah, without those understandings, you're going to be headed in 20 different directions. I mean, it was one of the best things that I ever realized when I began to look at his words in extant form is that Yahweh is not a religious deity. He hates religion.
Right.
I loved that notion. Perhaps it's because I was raised by an atheist. I don't know. But I do know this. I know that he hates religion. He has every reason to hate religion because religion is about submission.
Correct.
And he's not about that.
Yep. In fact, what we're going to consider after the commercial break is the term that was translated of the earth. It is actually Adamah. And we'll consider its relationship with Adam and therefore who the beneficiaries are and why they need this benefit. We'll return to Shattering Myths after the commercial break. Welcome back to Shattering Myths. Speaking with Scott about an episode that took place in the last couple of days at the offices of GCN and just generically, to summarize a conversation, someone came into the office and asked Scott if he believed in God. And the moment, Larry, somebody asked that question, you know something for absolute certain. They do not know Yahweh. You would never ask someone if they believe in God if you actually know him, because belief is the remedy for not knowing. The moment you know, belief is absolutely useless. In fact, it's counterproductive.
Right. Yada, do you believe in your wife? Does she
exist? Do you believe in your wife? What kind of a stupid when it's phrased that way, you say, what kind of a stupid question is that? My son came through the door and was chatting with me during the commercial break. And that'd be like asking me, do I believe in my son? I know him. We're buds. I have a relationship with him. I'm his father. Yes, I know my son. I don't believe my son. Then the other part of that, of course, is just, If you're going to ask about a relationship, about knowledge of someone, why would you use a generic term that could apply to anyone of 10 million gods? Why not use his name? If I'm going to say, hey, do you believe that guy? As in, not to identify him.
You mean as in, how do you know somebody you don't know? That's a good one. I'm with you here.
If the question doesn't come out of your mouth, do you know Yahweh? Then obviously you've got no clue who God is, and you don't know that he made himself available to us and introduced himself to us through his Torah in a way that proves his existence.
You know, I laid down the fact that Yahweh uses the term Big Bang in the second line of his opening statement to mankind.
Yes.
I laid out the fact that through six names in Nachmayah, we call Nehemiah, he tells us exactly how he's going to save the family.
Right.
And a guy said, so do you believe in God? He actually said that to me.
So it's the same question that was asked of Scott. And by the way, Scott's response to all of this was, the guy complained, he says, you know, you're not listening. And Scott's response was, well, you didn't listen to me. Why should I listen to you? So here is a guy who obviously did not listen to you, quote, the very witness of Yahweh, which would say, you know, I'm not quoting the witness of Yahweh for any other reason than I know him, and I trust him, and I rely on it, and I want to share what he's shared with us, with you. And the next comment is, do you believe? No, I know him. His name is Yahweh. Why use a generic at this point?
You would be surprised how many people you can share information with, and if they're Christian and you're telling them Christianity is you know, a twisted contortion and a counterfeit of about a half-truth, what they end up doing is asking you, so you don't believe in God. That's what they do. It's amazing.
Yes.
You can quote 30 scriptures.
Yes, and you can say that is correct. That is what I'm saying. I don't believe in God because I know Yahweh. And to believe in God, once you know Yahweh, would be stunningly counterproductive, a huge leap in the wrong direction. You know what Yahweh's next line is when he's talking about having enriched and blessed his family through the misfat, the means he uses to resolve disputes? It says, so Abram walked relationally and beneficially as Yahweh had asked of him, Debar.
He didn't crawl on his knees.
No.
He walked.
Yeah, in fact, I forgot to say that the of the earth was really of Adama. Adama is a derivative of Adam, the man, and it speaks of man that is conceived in the image of Yahweh with an asama, with a conscience, with an ability to discern between right and wrong, truth and falsehood. And then it says, so Abram, which means uplifting father, walked, talak, relationally, walked up on his feet, engaged, going someplace, relationally and beneficially, asha, as, just as in the manner, ka, Yahweh, had spoken to him, Debar. He relied upon Yahweh's words. He engaged based upon Yahweh's words. And he's walking with God. How about you?